Welcome to season two of The Culture of Comics. I'm Stephen Heiner, and with me, as always, is Jason Fraser. Jason, great to be with you in the new year and in a new season.
It is indeed. We've got kind of a bi-continental show going on now, so this will be very interesting this year.
Right, Jason is alluding to the fact that I live in Paris right now, and so we are streaming on two continents. This is too much Culture of Comics. Can people handle it?
We're trying to spread that culture around the world bit by bit.
So welcome to issue number 21. And a little bit of business from the end of last year. I hate to say a little bit bummed out about our survey results. We had around 300 listeners for the DC and Marvel end of season shows and around 200 listeners for our independents. But we had fewer than 10 respondents to our survey. So despite the fact that we offered bribes like trade paperbacks, we weren't able to get people onto our Facebook page or the survey. And I just want to speak briefly about the long-term plans for our show, do a bit of housekeeping, and then we'll get right into the meat of today's show, which is a Marvel show. And that is... if you look at, you know, what the podcasting landscape is like, and interestingly enough, as I talk with people here in France, podcasting is not a big deal in Europe. It's a very big deal in America. And part of a lot of free content is people give it the respect that it costs them to acquire. So, you know, you have a free podcast, you know, why do you care if it comes or it goes? Because there'll be another podcast. And I suppose what Jason and I and Chad, when he's guest hosting with us, are endeavoring to do is to create something that you want to have around, that you don't really, that you wouldn't really be happy with if we went off the air. And the network AMDG, on which we're sponsored, as well as our own podcast, is host supported and listener supported. And we've never really asked you guys for contributions. That's not really our goal. Our goal is to gain sponsorship for our show. And the way we can gain sponsorship for our show from people who want to be in front of comic book fans is to be able to get a sense of the demographics of our listeners. So if you fill out a survey for us, we have a better profile of who our listeners are. And then we can go to a sponsor and say, this is how many listens we get per show. This is what our listener looks like based on a sample. So we don't expect everyone to fill out a survey. But if you leave it to some, if you're listening to me and you're like, well, someone else will fill out a survey, well, that's you. So if you have any inclination that someone else is going to fill out the survey, I would just ask you to fill out the survey. It's not going to take very long. You'll find it in our show notes. So whether you listen to us on iTunes or on streaming on, if you go to the show notes, you'll see a link to the survey. The link may not be hot in the iTunes show description, so just come to blogtalkradio.com/AMDG, look at the show, and there's a link to the survey. Please fill it out. I can't guarantee that the podcast has long-term viability if we don't gain sponsorship. And we really need your help to do that. So help us get over 30 likes on Facebook. We're at 16. And again, I know we started late with that. In the beginning, the network was not encouraging individual shows to get Facebook pages. They were just keeping everything on the network. But now we all are getting our individual pages. So we know some of you have not had the opportunity to like our page. So please do that. Please fill out the survey. Help us, as Jason would say, help us help you. Help us help you.
And show me the money.
with that bit of housekeeping, again, Culture of Comics is a production of the AMDG Radio Network. All rights are reserved. And with that, we'll head right into today. We'll be talking about Daredevil, Hawkeye, and Superior Spider-Man, trying our new three-show format, show on Marvel, show on DC, and a show on odds and ends, which may include independents, may include movies, video games, action figures, that kind of thing. So, Jason, Daredevil, I'm gonna kind of kick this back to you to start us off. How do you feel about Marvel restarting books instead of simply continuing the run. Am I being an old fuddy-duddy who just wants to complain about things and say, you know, why can't we just have a book continue to run and assume that a higher number means there's more story arcs, instead of thinking, well, that was one story arc contained within a 25-book, let's say, two-year run. Let's start a whole nother book from number one so we can sell a bunch of number ones. Am I missing something here?
Well, Stephen, I think that's – now, for those who don't know, Stephen's alluding to the fact that the current Daredevil arc written by Mark Waid is, in fact, ending. And it was kind of funny how this came about, how we found out about this, right? Because we didn't actually find out about it. It wasn't actually officially announced until after we had read about it in the letters section of one of the later issues. Like, since the book's ending, like, someone says, can you do this in the future? He's like, no, since the book's ending, we can't do that. We're like, wait a minute. What? Hold on. So the book itself is actually, I believe, 31, 32 issues, something along these lines. How far along are we? 35? Yeah, that's it. 35 issues is, in fact, ending. And having been a very successful book, it makes you very curious. Of course, I think there's two points of view from this, Stephen. One is from a person like you and I who are longtime comic fans who maybe have that compulsion to have a complete run. It's kind of weird to go from Daredevil 600 to number one through 30 back to number one again. It feels weird, and that's understandable. But I think what they're doing with Marvel Now and all new Marvel Now, which is of course the second round of Marvel Now, is they're starting some books over with new, as major changes occur. It looks as though Daredevil will be moving out of New York City for the next volume and going to San Francisco or California. Now, for those who are longtime Daredevil fans or who know something about the character, you know that this actually technically isn't the first time he's gone to California. He did that. He moved to San Francisco many, 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 many years ago. For many, many issues, he lived out in California. I sound like the commissioner at a police academy many, many issues ago. Many, many. But
and I mean, who wouldn't with the weather in New York these days?
Well, he's tired of the blizzards. He's tired of the blizzards. He's tired of shenanigans. But I don't know, Stephen. I am just so happy to get comic books, especially. I know it sounds bizarre, but I'm so happy to be able to enjoy the medium that I love like this. And I don't care what number's on the cover. I don't. At the end of the day, as long as I'm getting a book with some characters who are great, with some good writers and artists. And FYI, the writer isn't changing for Daredevil, the new volume, whatever that may be called. So we're still getting some excellent Mark Waid action from Daredevil. We're just going to be getting a new number one, a new setting. And I think this is kind of the new face of comic books is a lot of restarting things. As things change, at least the new face of Marvel comic books. DC has always done a lot of reboots, and then they've always brought it back to original numbering as well. I suspect when they get to Daredevil number 700, Stephen, we're going to see a restart. We're going to see a number 700, and it'll number back to original for a while, then they'll go back to number one again. But numbers don't matter, or not really. The number on your cover isn't going to change the story within. If a story you enjoy, then please just enjoy it and don't worry about the number on the front.
Okay. Okay. Well, I definitely think Jason is representing the progressive and no drama portion of our show. I'm going to be the old traditionalist buddy duddy who wants to complain about it.
It's okay.
My only issue for the numbering, I think part of what makes comics great is the history and tradition behind something. And so when you see issue number 627, and you're not someone who has the full run, i.e. you're not 60 years old,
right,
and collecting comics, you know, without stopping this whole time, it makes you realize that you don't know everything, that there's a lot of stuff in the backstory that you need to get back to. And I think this is much more of a marketing ploy. I think number one issues sell better than any other type of issue. other than, let's say, the death of Spider-Man or something. And you have that burden of a lot of issues on the newer, younger readers. And so Marvel doesn't want to put that burden on them. Say, well, we don't want you to feel left out, you know, with issue number 262. So every couple years, we're going to restart and we'll get to pick up the newer readers. And I don't know whether this speaks to how comic books are shifting in terms of its readership or the expectations of the readership. So I do think it's a smart marketing move just for someone like me who likes tradition, who likes numbers to show continuity and length of time and pay homage to, you know, writers and artists that have come before and readers as well, that you're involved in that. You know, when you pick up a really, you know, big issue, which I guess you have to look to something like Spawn now. Spawn's the sort of oldest comic I'm picking up at, you know, issues 200 something. You have that sense of continuity. And I'm not going to boycott Marvel. I have my own objection to it, but I also see Jason's perspective and I think it's well taken. So I think
you've got a very good point, Steve. And I'm not trying to downplay the fact that that there is a larger world, so to speak, behind all the issues the comic books we're enjoying now. There's a much larger and much more storied history than Daredevil 35. To the point that Daredevil actually had I think it was a 500 issue, maybe 600. I think it was 600 actually, a few years ago. I don't think they'll do the same thing. I think Marvel is going to capitalize on that as well. They know how to play well to each group, whether they be new or old readership. When it comes time for a 700 issue, 800 issue, you better believe they're going to put that number on that cover, and they're going to charge $6 for it. That's how it's going to work. It's going to be a double size, triple size, huge event, and it'll be well taken. But in the meantime, we'll be enjoying our Daredevil, regardless of the number on the cover. I think you have probably enjoyed this run of Daredevil significantly more, and you correct me if I'm wrong, you probably weren't even reading Daredevil before that, since it was kind of right around the time you got back in that it started again.
I had to buy, in fact, all those early Daredevils were sold out. I had to buy the 10-issue trade, hardback trade, to get caught up on issues 1 through 10 of this run, and then I couldn't put it down. And really, really enjoyed it. And I suppose that's what we want to transition to talking about is what did this arc accomplish, volume, if we call it volume 7, I guess volume 8 of Daredevil is going to launch in March, if my polls tell me correctly. So I'm not going to get to really see any Daredevil until March. Well, at least it's not going to start on the new storyline. But there are a lot of really great things accomplished in this storyline, and I wanted to speak to that a bit, just point by point. And the first one, Jason, is love life. I think that one of the things that we've dealt with before, and I think you've said quite well, is there's a difficulty with marriage in the superhero world, that superheroes, either the companies or the superheroes, decide that marriage isn't going to work for them. And then there's also the dichotomy of, do I need to be with someone else who's a superhero, i.e. the Superman Wonder Woman line, or do I need to be with an ordinary human, the people who are on the Team Thor Jane? And I think this volume did a good job of exploring both possibilities. We saw early on the Black Cat encounter, rendezvous, and then also his professional life with the assistant district attorney. So picking up on themes that we've talked about in previous issues of the Culture of Comics, how did you look at Daredevil's and I guess we could throw in some perspectives on his ex-wife, who is in an insane asylum, the three loves of Daredevil in this volume, how they interplayed with each other, and how you think about him specifically with Daredevil and then more broadly with comics in general.
Sure. Well, I think, first of all, first of all, two points about Daredevil and love in general. First of all, Daredevil's kind of a slut. I mean, this guy gets around. Just historically, you can look at his conquest list, so to speak, and it's long. I don't know what the guy's got going on, but he's pulled in a lot of ladies over the years. He's Black Widow, Black Cat, Misty Knight, two, three, or four normal ladies, and then a few others. I mean, it's just an insane amount of love life. And I think it's kind of weird because I've always thought of Daredevil as Marvel's Batman a little bit. I know that sounds like a weird comparison, but that's just the weird way that it's worked for me. And so Marvel's Batman's actually dating Commissioner Gordon, kind of. You know, he's working with the District Attorney, dating Harvey Dent or whatever. But how that's worked, I think it's worked well overall. I think Daredevil works as a character in that he doesn't ever really find one person, and he doesn't really necessarily care about being with one person. And I'm not saying he's terrible and cheating on all these ladies and everything, but he moves around. He's quick to move on. And I find that interesting. I think the new relationship with the district attorney, I find probably more interesting than the Black Cat one, and that's weird to say, I know, because Black Cat is a very attractive fictional character, but this relationship he has with the district attorney is adversarial. It's kind of like... It's how I like my relationships. It's kind of back and forth. It's not always cute and cuddly, but it still works well. But they're at each other's throats, but in a good way. You know, she's always saying, "I know you're Daredevil. I know you're Daredevil. I know you're Daredevil." And he's like, "No, I'm not. Prove it. I'm blind. You're crazy." But deep down, they both know the truth. I mean, obviously, that Matt Murdock is Daredevil. He's one of the interesting Marvel characters who everybody basically knows who he is, and yet they still don't because he still denies it. And that's the only thing keeping everybody from just outright knowing is that he just still says, "No, I'm not." Who knew, Steven, that that's all you had to do to keep your secret identity was just go, "No, I'm not. That's not me."
Yeah, just wear a red T-shirt.
Yeah, we know it's you. No, it's not. Okay, you're right. Sorry about that. But I think Daredevil, as a character, with a love life, he's always worked really well for me. Every relationship he's had has worked well. Even the ex-wife, who I thought was a very interesting character as well, because, as I recall, she was blind as well as him. Blind, but without the super sense. Or blind or deaf. I'm pretty sure it was blind. Mila was driven insane by one of his villains, and thus, of course, no longer driven insane by Mr. Fear, in fact. And it was a great storyline, by the way. Back around, oddly enough, issue 600 or so of Daredevil. That's when that happened, or a little prior to that, as a matter of fact. It was a very good story, and I think Daredevil. What was interesting about the Daredevil thing is that prior to that, it wasn't as though he was going. The marriage wasn't working. He was married for a very short time, but still, nonetheless, it still worked really well. As a relationship, and of course, oddly enough, at that same time, Spider-Man was also approximately that same time. Spider-Man was just getting out of his marriage, you know, his deal with the devil. And again, that brings us to a larger issue: that what the heck is the deal? Why do we not want these characters to progress like the rest of us progress? Not that everybody has to get married, but it's okay to be in a relationship and to share that aspect of your life with other people. That aspect, the superheroic aspect, is I've always found it interesting to me, from a Spider-Man perspective, to know that his wife was at home worried about him every time he went out. I think that's a great story idea. I mean, a great storyline angle, I should say. He goes out and he has a lot of fun. He wisecracks. He gets beat up. But somebody is at home not having fun because they don't know if he's going to go home that night. And I think that's a very sobering thought, and maybe that's why they do it. They want to keep the superhero books, well, you could argue that maybe they want to keep it light, but I think sometimes we see the opposite. But I think that's such an interesting idea, that there's somebody else out there, a normal person married to a superhero, who is concerned, is worried about them not coming home tonight, not making it back from that cosmic event. So I think Daredevil has always worked well from a relationship perspective. He hasn't been one who I thought, well, you know, he should have stayed married. I understand why the marriage didn't work out and why he backed off. That makes sense. And from a character perspective, he's always been kind of loosey-goosey when it comes to that. So that's okay. I think when you look at other characters, obviously it's a little more upsetting to see that they can't figure out how to make this work. There is one prime example, though, Stephen, from Marvel, that someone can stay married for 60 years. And that's, of course, the Fantastic Four, Reed and Sue Richards. They've been married, goodness, since maybe the late 60s, early 70s, I believe, or something like that. And I think that's worked, but they've also never really taken any chances with that storyline, except for they've both been dead here or there. You know, there was an interesting storyline during the Civil War event that Reed and Sue were separated because she took a separate stance than he did at that point. And I thought that was interesting. It didn't really build on that. There was never really any thread, but that can be an interesting storyline from a marriage perspective if you're going to have that melodrama anyway. There's no reason not to have it with someone who they've been married to. And I don't know. You may disagree with me on that, Stephen, but I just think it's okay for a character to mature, especially as the comic books have matured over time. You can look now and say, and I think we can all agree that now the target audience for a comic book is not who it was 60 years ago. If you look at the storylines, the art, just the sheer dialogue they're using, this is clearly meant for an older audience than originally intended when this came out back in the 60s. So the storylines and the motives and the themes can change and mature as well. That's okay. And they have, except for that aspect, which I find very curious. What do you think, sir?
I suppose my opinion is based on my stance on Thor Sif versus Thor Jane. And I think I came to this discussion thinking, well, you know, it's got to be one way or the other. And as I thought about it before the show, I realized it's going to vary for each situation. As you say, the black cat thing is more frivolous and part of sort of the
fun part of superheroing.
Right. And it's not whereas Kristen and I argue maybe one of the top three most memorable comics of this run and maybe one of the top 10 comics I've ever read in my life was the issue in which they go on a date and he blindfolds her and he walks her through what a day is like for him, all the while he's being chased by his enemies and they get ambushed. But how often, Jason, how do you and I, we're sighted people, how do we get an opportunity to understand in any remote way what it's like to be blind, you know? And I'm not saying that the comic book taught me, you know, what it was like, but the comic book gave me some insight. It showed me some things by showing me what people can't be shown when they're blind. I really appreciated that issue broadly, but it also shed some light on how dating happens between people who are sighted and not sighted. And an interesting twist that Matt Murdock put on the relationship and really trying to pursue something with her, even though there's a number of conflicts of interest, as you stated earlier on. So although I'm an advocate of Thor Sif, because I think she's of the proper class and ability to match him, and I don't think that Jane is, I think in the same way, the Kristen and Matt work well here because she is his equal. And I suppose that's how many good relationships work, not just romantically, but when there is a sense of equality, not that, you know, you're equal to me, quote unquote, but that both parties bring different things to the table that challenge each other. And I think that that's the same in friendship as it is in romance. And I guess we'll see what happens. We're going to San Francisco, so things will change, obviously. But, you know, I think this is, for a lot of us, a very compelling part of reading comic books is the romantic aspect. How does the superhero deal with relationships?
I don't think it's explored nearly enough, but I agree. And that was a fantastic issue, by the way. It's just a great issue.
Speaking of friendships, we also got a chance to see both a adversarial and a custodial relationship with his best friend, Foggy. Foggy, who thought that Matt was lying to him and digging up his father's bones. And Foggy, who got cancer and had to be confined to a hospital bed. So we got to see a relationship intertwined with a business relationship. For those of us who have been in businesses with friends, that brings a special poignancy there that it definitely makes life easier, but also more complicated when you're in business with a friend. And also that friendships endure past the conflicts, even something that seemed to be so unbreakable that, you know, Foggy, you know, told Matt to leave the practice and said that he didn't want to talk to him anymore. When the reality is, you know, he turns around and becomes his caretaker and really the only person who's there for him through that cancer episode that we're watching now.
It's again, and this speaks a little bit to what we're kind of skirting around as we talk about the relationship thing, is that, and I believe we talked about this in the very first episode, which we also covered there, Evelyn, is just how sometimes these human issues can be so interesting from a comic book perspective, and this is a very human story, right? I mean, we all, every one of us at some point in our lives is probably going to be, maybe not scared they've got cancer, but worried about it. It's such a scary human thing, indiscriminate. You never know who's going to get it. You can kind of see who might, it's probably going to get it because of smoking, etc. But you just never know. And to see somebody who we care about stricken and changed in such a way is very, very scary. And I don't think comic books should shy away from these kind of stories either. So I'm glad to see this happening. I'm very worried for Foggy. I think at the end of last issue, something's happened. And we all know he's moving to San Francisco. He may do that because he doesn't have any ties left in New York, which worries me. But, again, it's been a very interesting story along the way. But it's scary. It's scary. I mean, it hits home for a lot of people, I think.
Well, and the other death, of course, that was looming in this volume was the death of his father that we saw literally dug back up. You know, when part of a resolution of death is when we bury somebody, we throw some dirt on top of the casket, and that's part of signaling that, you know, we've accepted it and that, you know, let the dead bury their dead and to move forward. And to have your father's, you know, body violated and brought back up, and that was definitely, and then have it made to look like you did it when it was really your enemy who did it. I mean, there's just a number of challenges put in Daredevil's path, and I really felt for him. You know, looking at your father's bones or his violated grave, there's nothing for it, is there?
No, I think he handled it rather well. I think it was more along the lines of the supporting cast going, "You've gone crazy," and he's like, "No, I didn't. I swear." Once again, he used that. He must be an amazing lawyer because he used that. "No, I didn't. No, I'm not." That's you could tell the lawyer at heart. It's not me, just because I say it isn't. But it was a good storyline, and Daredevil, just like, much like Batman, much like many superheroes, they've always kind of had this dark corner of something with their parents or their father. And so that's always been a major part of Daredevil, is the reason he became the hero he is because of his dad, etc. But I don't know. I think the desecration, it didn't seem to impact him quite as much as it did everybody else, because we're looking at that. That's why everybody thought he was crazy, as you may recall, is that he didn't really take that with a, I'm going to go have a 12-issue depression storyline. He kind of shook it off, and I think that's what's good about Daredevil versus many superheroes, is he certainly takes his hits and bounces back very quick. And I think that's one of the hallmarks of this particular volume, is that Daredevil has been unreasonably cheery the whole time, put it that way. He's been overwhelmingly positive throughout, and I don't want to cover old ground again because we talked about this in the original, the inaugural Culture Comics show, when we talked about Daredevil, but it's so heartening to deal with somebody who is arguably handicapped, but is more cheerful than those who have what he doesn't. And so I think that's something that I've really enjoyed about Daredevil in general, is at least from this run, that he had his grim and gritty depression era kind of stuff, and that was prior to this run, as a matter of fact. So much so that he actually went bad and took over New York City for a bit, for those who remember the Shadowland story. But that's not who that character is. I never really felt right. He's always been a very positive character. Regardless of how he deals with his parental issues, he's always accepted who he knew who his father was. He loved his father. And whether he's in the grave or not, it doesn't really matter. His father is still very much a part of who he is. I think that's very interesting. I think it's worked out well from a character perspective, and I think he dealt with it pretty well. I think we would deal with it very differently. I think, of course, it couldn't really happen for us ideally, but I think he deals with loss in general very well, and I think that's always been something that's drawn me to Daredevil as a character.
Yeah, and as you say, you know, having a cheerier look on things, it isn't just being Pollyanna and saying, you know, everything's sunshine and roses. I think it's that level-headed balance of being grateful for what you have, and I think that we see that over and over in the show. It's certainly a lesson that's come to hit home more for me as I've been living in a new country. I don't have a car because I live in a city where it's easier to walk or to take the metro than it is to have a car and pay for parking and do all that other stuff, but I guess it puts things into more, you know, when someone wants to complain about gas, I'm more likely to say, yeah, but you have a car. you know, so look behind the complaint and ask yourself, is that a real complaint? And to look at what, you know, he has in his life, and, you know, he's grateful. To that, you mentioned handicapped, and it's the last thing I want to talk about before we move on to our other books, because if it were up to me, we could spend the whole 2 hours on Daredevil, and we don't want to do that. We want to get to our other listeners. But one of the things that we've enjoyed in a lot of different comic books this year is secret origin stories, where we get to go back and not quite reinvent the origin, but basically I look at it as a third or fourth camera. You know, sometimes when you get a Blu-ray DVDs, they've got alternate camera angles for different shots or different scenes. And when you get new twists on the original origin, it's like there's a secret camera there. It's like, oh, okay, well, we never showed you this camera angle. It's still the same story, but you didn't see this angle. And that was finding out how Daredevil came to be at that intersection where the truck crashed and blinded him. And it was, had to do with a bully. And I really, really enjoyed that. And I don't know who started this trend of going back to revisit secret origins or Origin Plus or Origin Director's Cut, but that was one of my favorite things in this volume. It was a callback to how we got started with Daredevil. So it makes newer readers feel like they're in on the old story, but it also means that he's been a hero for a long time, but that he got a chance to be called out on his perception of things versus what an alleged bully had. And it helps us to question our own childhood recollections and helps us remember, are we just telling ourselves our narrative? Or are we being fair enough to look at the other person's perspective? Especially because of memory and time, things will always maybe skew to your own point of view, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, I think everybody has, like you said, life is a multiple angle story. Everybody is a star of their own show. And so when it comes to something like that, we're all going to assume that we are the ones who have been wronged or were in the right, or I think that's human nature across the board. I mean, I can think of many times, if you take a clear and honest look back, of times when maybe like, well, you know, I thought I was right then, but when I look at it now, I was kind of a dick, you know, or something like that. So it happens. It happens a lot. And again, we're looking from a superhero perspective. They're always going to assume the hero's in the right. And so these different angles, as you said, they're much appreciated, and they're a fresh take on an old story, which I think when you look at people, some people will tell you there's no new stories in the world. There's just different variations. And to some extent, at least in the comic book world, that's somewhat true. But I disagree there's not going to be any new ideas ever. I think there's a lot of things that haven't been out yet, things that I can think of that we haven't seen yet. But as long as I'm okay with an old story told a new way, as long as it's done in a very interesting way. And I was hoping you would actually mention it, at least mention this issue, because when we talk about art and covers, just the cover on this issue was, I saw that, I'm like, okay, what's happening in this issue? It's got the kid on the front with the T-shirt that says, I beat Daredevil.
Right.
I had no idea where we were going here with that. I was like, what does all this mean? We look at this, and this kid, he was a bully, yeah, but he also kind of wanted what he had. And it was a good story. It was a very good story. But, it's all been so interesting to me to see different, as you said, different angles. We're seeing now a Batman a little bit now, too. But he's, as you said, he's not the only one. Most memorably for me this year, along with this one, was, of course, the adjustment to Tony Stark's origin. Same old, right. Actually, that's actually not even the same old story. That's a whole new story about his origin, but his true origin. But I know we're not talking about Iron Man today, so I'll leave that to the side for now. But I thought it was well done. I mean, I think your point is very well taken, that we all see ourselves as the heroes in our own story, and we're always in the right. And I think it's interesting to take a step back from that, just like we do in real life in a comic book, and say, well, maybe not quite like you think it was now. The thing is, Stephen, there's so many issues I enjoy from this year. It's so hard. It's from this particular run. Such a good story. Such a good book. I mean, it's sad to see it ending, but I'm excited to see where they're going to be going with the new stories. I think the all-new Marvel Now has some very cool ideas coming up, and Daredevil is amongst them at the top of those new ideas.
Absolutely. And to just bookend, and we'll finish up our Daredevil discussion. For those of you who are just joining us, you are listening to The Culture of Comics, issue number 21. We're kicking off season 2 here on the AMDG Radio Network for our show. And a couple of our sister shows have already started. Swords in Space, our brother from another mother, did a show on The Hobbit a couple days ago. Definitely worth a listen. Depending on whether you're a fan of Peter Jackson's vision or not, and also The Beautiful Game, which is a soccer podcast that I help co-host. We also had our first. So now we're getting to the comics first kickoff for our season. So been really exciting. With me, as always, Jason Frazier. I'm Stephen Heiner, and we've been talking Daredevil for the first part of our show. And to finish that discussion, I just wanted to talk about the special book. I think the whole reason that there are special books of Daredevil, Jason, is because there's enough demand for these special events, but not enough demand for another Daredevil book. It's strange to me. You would think they would create another Daredevil book and maybe cite some of these stories within here, but they seem content to do runs. And we talked last season about Daredevil End of Days, which I consider one of the finest miniseries I've ever read. Particularly satisfying, not just if you're a Daredevil fan, but even if you don't know anything about Daredevil, I think you'll enjoy it. But what do you think of Dark Knight? That's a miniseries that's coming to an end also now. What do you think of how that's been playing out?
Well, just to touch on that limited series notion you mentioned earlier, and I'm sorry, it's been so long since we talked. I have so much to talk about. But to share with the audience, so to speak. But I think it's interesting that we say Daredevil can't support a second book, so we're just going to do limited series. But when you think about it, what was it, like a month he went this year without a limited series out?
Yeah.
2013? I think it was only a month's difference between End of Days and Dark Knight starting.
Right.
So arguably, you could have put something in the middle there and had a whole other series the whole year. Right. It could have, and I think Dark Knight and End of Days both kind of fit in continuity and kind of don't. So they, it could have been a book that was just a series of various loose end stories from Daredevil. I agree, End of Days was great. End of Days is a story about the end of Daredevil, of course. Dark Knights is a celebration of some of the things that that make Daredevil who he is. I really, really enjoyed this series. The last issue actually just came out, I believe, this week. I think that's right. I know it's out now. So I really enjoyed the stories all throughout. My favorite issues of this whole series, though, were the first couple, in which the story, there was a story about the city, and this is a very timely story right now for us in the U.S., in which the city shut down because of a massive winter storm. And there's a little girl dying who needs a heart, and the helicopter crashes and is bringing the heart to the hospital. So Daredevil goes out on this odyssey across New York, which he normally would be very quick about, you would assume, but because of this storm and this awful circumstances, it's a little bit like like The Hobbit. Like, it's a journey. You know, it's a journey to mount crashed helicopter and then back home again with his heart. And I thought it was such a cool little story. I really, really, really enjoyed it. But every story that's come out in this Dark Knight series has been very cool. The last story we had was him and Misty Knight, who were from Heroes for Hire, dealing with trying to save a witness in a murder in a criminal trial, and of course going to a foreign country to deal with that. And it was all, I mean, I don't think there were any misses in this series, from my perspective. I liked every story. So for me, this was amazing. This might be blasphemy to you, Stephen, but I think I might have enjoyed this one more than Dark Knight, or than End of Days, excuse me. because again, I like myself, I am perpetually optimistic and perpetually like to believe that the good thing is going to happen in the end. If you work towards it, you do the right thing, it's going to work out for you. End of Days was a very dark story, very gritty, very, very noir. Dark Knights was very much not. Dark Knights was, in many ways, just some very, very cool Daredevil stories that could have easily fit into the current volume of Daredevil, as a matter of fact. They were that good and that keeping in tone with the series we know and love already. Really enjoyed it. What'd you think, man?
For me, speaking directly to your point about optimism, I think the story arc that led off Dark Knight, the girl who needed a heart transplant and the interconnecting webs and the resolution for that story, I think, really explored something that we wouldn't – I think that's part of the beauty of a limited series is we can ignore everything else that's going on in Daredevil and just focus on this story. So there's no giant criminal conspiracy. There's no missing hard drive. There's no challenge with your romantic relationship. There's just Daredevil on this mission to save a little girl. And that's what's nice about a miniseries. And I think it was a great lead off. And as you say, I think really struck the tone, especially I think coming off of End of Days. And I'm not going to give away anything as to how it ends or I really think it's something you need to read for yourself. But without getting into that, I do think it did a very good job of purposely striking a different note, as you would say, maybe the yin to the yang for the two for the two miniseries. Say, all right, well, there's that side of Daredevil, and let's talk about this side as well. So, for those listeners who said, all right, Stephen and Jason, we've had quite enough of Daredevil, let's move on. That's fine. We're going to move on to a guy and a girl, Hawkeye and Hawk Guy, or just plain old Hawkeye. And I think, Jason, that's where I want to kind of start off. We didn't really have this, I would say, problem last year and last season with Hawkeye, which was the problem of a two-person book. And this was particularly noticed when we had the annual and Kate Bishop, our younger female Hawkeye, went out to California. And you can't... It's really hard to have one complete storyline that's happening in New York and one complete storyline that's happening in California in the same book, especially when you're trying to make the point that they're both named Hawkeye and one's not Hawk Girl or he's not Hawk Guy. How am I am I being paranoid here? Do we need to see more shipping dates? Do you think they're pulling it off? Is Kate going to come back from California? Is this really straining the book, or do you think they're doing a really good job and maybe I'm missing something?
Well, I don't want to downplay your point, and I don't want to say that it's always going to work, but I think, speaking to your point, in our pre-show, Steve and I talked for about 15, 20 minutes before the show starts usually. I think I even mentioned, it seems like it's been forever since there's been an issue of Hawkeye out. And it really hasn't. Because of the way the storyline's been working, it feels like it's been forever since I've dealt with an issue with Hawkeye and not Kate Bishop. And I want to give more credit to the comic book fans, myself included, I hope, and that we can remember what was happening 2 months ago without having to see it every month. But I think it's also easy to kind of lose your place momentarily in a story. Like, what was happening with Clint, and what was happening with Kate? I don't remember anymore, you know? Especially if you're like me and you read just a metric ton of comics each month, it's gonna be very difficult to try to keep track of that. And I think they should be aware of that a little bit. But I think the reason they're doing that is because they're two very different people, and I think each story is worth telling. I do like Kate Bishop's attempts to get a job and her private eye work. I think that's all, to me, that's been kind of the lighter side of Hawkeye, whereas Hawkeye, Clint Barton, of course, had some very rough issues this year with, of course, murder and various things happening. Now, this book also, interestingly enough, has also been perpetually, I would argue, mostly light-toned this year, but for the most part, I think Kate Bishop's stuff has been, here's my trademark, has been more fun than the male Hawkeye. It's confusing to try to talk about it, isn't it, Steven, to say Hawkeye has been more fun than Hawkeye? Like, what? How do I do this?
You could just resort to the hot guy versus, or you can say Young Avengers Hawkeye. I mean, either way, it's awkward. There's no easy way to talk about it. I guess you could just say Kate and Clint. And interestingly enough, I right now as we're talking about it and the conflict, I'm thinking about the issue where Clint walks into the room and it has the work wife, the ex-wife, and the girlfriend. And they're all playing a card game, and Clint is definitely, if Daredevil is smooth with the ladies, Clint Barton is kind of the opposite. He manages to wreck and not even intentionally, he's not trying to be a jerk. He's just not thoughtful enough in his relationships with females, be it romantic, platonic, or just work related. So we'll see how that works out. I think my challenge is, how do you conduct – I like the conceit of the two people named the same person in the same book. I like that. But I thought it worked really well when they were both in New York. I don't see how it's going to work. I don't see how it's going to work if they live in different cities.
Well, I think it's just two very different stories, right? Kate Bishop's is about trying to find herself and find her feet in a different place, which one have you enjoyed more? From your perspective, which has been more interesting to you?
Well, Jason, keep in mind your answer is influenced by the fact that your favorite book is Young Avengers, in which Kate Bishop is. So I think, because I tend towards the more serious, so in light of our last discussion about End of Days versus Dark Nights, I'm the kind of guy who's going to prefer the darker noir story to the happier story. I think I probably, in the same way, am enjoying Clint's struggles. And I'm enjoying Kate being detective, too. That's fun. That part of me is very much present, but I think I'm more focused on the murder that happened in New York and how that's going to work out with the tracksuits and the hitman and where that storyline is going. Whereas I see the Kate detective story as, even though she's dealing with Madame Mask and that is threatening as all get out, I still think there's less urgency in that storyline. I'm like, well, that can play out over like 10 issues. Who cares? Let's find out who murdered Grills. You know, or let's get to the murder of Grills. And I want to see more Pizza Dog in action, although Pizza Dog's with Kate right now.
There you go. That's your answer. Pizza dogs with Kate. I think that's a well-taken point. But I think if we look at the connective tissue between the two, I think Madam Mask may be a catalyst for bringing them back together at some point. I mean, she was heavily dealt with in one of my favorite arcs of this, which is the beginning of last year, which was the tape. I liked that story a lot, and Madam Mask played a major part in that. So they could be coming back together as a result.
Hawkeye to California, too. He and Matt Murdock can roommate up.
Well, why not? I mean, they need to get him all out. I mean, New York must be the most well-protected city in the Marvel Universe. I'd be scared to live in Wisconsin, because I bet there's nobody out there. If you want to take over the world, that's where you would start in the Marvel Universe, is Wisconsin. But we know from the very first, again, from the very first episode, which we discussed this book in as well, this is a good book. I feel like this book could probably benefit from double shipping, and you could double ship and have one from each story, one from each person, each month. And that way everybody would get their fix. And those like Steven and myself would probably read both ships the whole time. But those who want to pick and choose are welcome to. I think the trouble is, we know that Clint Barton can carry a book. Kate Bishop by herself, interesting enough, her fan base is growing, but can she carry her own book or her own side of this? And for how long can that really be viable? I agree. I mean, as I said outright earlier, I like Kate Bishop's stuff a little better at the moment, but I can't see that lasting forever. Whereas we're going with Hawkeye, because it's been kind of directionless, and I don't mean it in a bad way, because his book is kind of like the step back, and like we talked about many, many, many months ago, the kind of off time of a superhero, that can last a long time. But we've already established Hawkeye, Clint, as who he is, a hero, an Avenger. So he's got more of a fan base. He's more viable long term, whereas Kate Bishop may or may not last as long. Although I think she's quickly becoming my favorite Hawkeye. I agree with you that it's probably not quite as interesting long term, but at the moment, she's not Miss Forever, Miss Right, but she's good Miss Right Now. How about that?
Yeah, we'll definitely see what's going on with that. I think more than anything, I hope, and there's a lot tying, I suppose, probably why we grouped these superheroes together. It wasn't random. Obviously, you realize these are all, generally speaking, New York-based characters, and they do interact with each other. We do have Spider-Man interacting with Daredevil, and Hawkeye interacting with the Avengers, and sometimes Spider-Man as well. So we picked this group because they fit well together. But as far as Hawkeye and Daredevil go, I think they both managed to be really true to themselves with the art and the storytelling, and they've won multiple Eisner Awards for their current run. So we're not, Jason and I aren't the only people who think this. A lot of other people do, and the industry does as well. And I don't always believe that the majority is right, but at least as far as this goes, I think that it makes sense. And I suppose, Jason, we're going to have to wait as the season unfolds, as our season unfolds and as the calendar year unfolds, as to how they're going to resolve this difficulty, if we can call it a difficulty, the challenge of two people having the same name within the same book without splitting the book, because I don't really want to see another Hawkeye book. I want all this goodness contained in one book.
I agree. I think double shipping is the answer for that. I mean, we'll get more Hawkeye, which we all enjoy, and we can easily get more issues out quicker and get to the point. I feel like that maybe that's kind of the issue, is it's taking a long time to get to the point.
Right. I agree. Anything else that you want to say about Hawkeye before we move to the superior book in this discussion?
Well, I think, you know, this is just a little fun fact, but I think all of these books are actually under the same editor as well. So that's
right.
Maybe we're looking at this editor from Marvel. I believe it's Stephen Wacker. I believe he edits all of these books. And you know, I just recently learned that Stephen Wacker's leaving Marvel Comics to go to Marvel Animation, so hopefully this doesn't impact the quality of all three of these books we're talking about today, because all three have been top-notch overall. So,
yep.
Stephen Wacker, just make sure you have a good replacement, man, because we enjoy all of these books, and they've all been very strong over this time. But Hawkeye itself, like I said, I think the most the whole point we want to get out of today's discussion with Hawkeye is we just need more of it in our lives. So make that double shipping happen. I mean, I'm okay with this double shipping more than some of the other ones that are.
Speaking of double shipping, let's get right into it. Superman. And, Jason, I mentioned to you before the show that, and actually last season I mentioned that I got out. Part of my time travel overload, Superior did not make the cut as yet another Spider-Man who wasn't Peter Parker time traveled into the current Marvel universe. I decided to get off the Spider-Man train, and I had been on since 697, so the end of Peter Parker, and I was there as a new Spider-Man reader for the new book, and I really liked what was going on early on, issues 1 through 12. Things started to fall off for me, and then the time travel thing happened. So for our listeners who, like yourself, are a little bit more caught up, or listeners like myself who stopped, can you catch us up as to what happened after the new Spider-Man got there, what the direction of the book is now, and what your outlook of the book is going into this calendar year?
I would be delighted. I think I have some very big news for those who don't scour the internet for news daily as well. So I've got to share that at the end of this wrap up. You guys, I think it'll excite everybody. So bear with me. Give me a couple minutes. I'll get there. So first of all, to set the book up for those who haven't been reading, and I'll do this very quickly since most of you who listen probably have been reading this book. Dr. Octopus, beginning in issue 600 of Spider-Man, set a plan in motion in which he would take over the life of Peter Parker. He didn't know who Spider-Man was necessarily at that point, but he's going to take over Spider-Man's life because he was dying. We get into close to issue 700, and by the way, just an amazing job on I've said this before, Dan Slott's the guy I love to hate, because I dislike, this is such a weird book because I dislike it, but I also love it. It's such a good story arc, and I think that's the point. Superior Spider-Man, it's not a new start for the character. It's a story arc in The Amazing Spider-Man. But it's been built up over 100 issues, and there were clues throughout. Throughout those 100 issues, Dan Slott inserted hints into where this thing was going. So we get close to 700, where Steven jumped in at 697 or so. Dr. Octopus is ill, dying, beat to death about at this point. And we begin to follow the story of a little golden Octobot, the little train that could, and its journey throughout New York. We get to 700. We get to this point, we find out that Dr. Octopus has, in fact, taken over Spider-Man, Peter Parker, and Peter Parker is in Dr. Octopus's body, allegedly. And, in fact, the bad guy wins. Dr. Octopus, or Peter Parker, in Dr. Octopus's body, dies. Dr. Octopus, Otto Octavius, has taken over Peter Parker's body and is now, for all intents and purposes, Spider-Man. He changes things that work for Spider-Man. He changes a lot of things about Spider-Man that he would do differently. And so, because he thinks he's doing a better job, he calls himself the Superior Spider-Man. The Superior Spider-Man quickly differentiates himself by, first of all, being extremely harsh on criminals, beating many of them nearly to death, in fact, killing at least one, and showing that he's willing to kill many more along the way. And he kills Massacre in a very brutal way. I mean, he shoots him right through the skull. So, this guy, execution style. So he's not playing around. But then he begins to build an army. He continues to use scientific developments with Horizon to his benefit. He builds an army. He takes over Spider Island, has a whole bunch of henchmen. This guy now has hundreds and hundreds of Octobots or Spider Bots now roaming the city, watching crime. So yes, he is a more self-aware Spider-Man and a little bit more willing to take things further than Peter Parker would have. But I think the whole point of the story is that this is not about how he's a better Spider-Man, but how, even though he may think he's superior, he's making a lot of missteps along the way because he doesn't have the responsibility that Peter Parker had. He has the power, all the power, none of the responsibility, which is a good tagline for the book, all the power, none of the responsibility, I think. In the beginning issues, up to about the point where Steven jumped off, Peter Parker was still inside of his mind as a ghost, so to speak, working his way and trying to take his body back over. And in about issue 9, Octavius actually, quote-unquote, killed Peter Parker in his own mind, entirely wiped out. So I'll feel a lot of Spider-Man fans into an uproar, I think. Since then, he's only gone further down his path. At this point, he has destroyed Horizon Labs, not intentionally. Through his actions, he's allowed to be destroyed, Horizon Labs. He started his own business, Parker Industries. He's cut out all the women in Spider-Man's life originally, Carly Cooper, Mary Jane Watson, Black Cat, and some of those very brutally. He beat the holy hell out of Black Cat. And Mary Jane kicked out. Carly now knows the truth. She's figured out that Spider-Man, what happened to Spider-Man and who he is. Alongside that, as Steven mentioned, there was a time-traveling storyline in which Spider-Man from the 2099 era traveled back in time to help stop a catastrophe and ended up getting stuck in our time. So Spider-Man 2099 is actually currently working alongside one of the villains in the story, who will be creating the Alchemax Corporation in the future. Time travel, confusing, I know. I'll leave that alone. That's enough about that one. But currently, we're dealing with an issue in which Venom, or Flash Thompson, has come back to New York and actually had the symbiote taken away from him, the Venom symbiote, taken away by Superior Spider-Man. So now, currently, Superior Spider-Man's running around town in the Venom costume, calling himself, now he's Superior Venom. That is about to end. I think that storyline ends next week, as a matter of fact. And alongside that, we also have the Green Goblin, who woke up many, many issues ago, building an army into the city. So that's where we're at. That's where we're at right now. Now, this year, we do have, starting next month, we have the Goblin Nation story arc, which was actually teased in these various Marvel teasers they put out as the end, or the beginning of the end. I like to talk about rumors. I like to talk about where I think things are going. Rumor has it that issue number 31 was supposed to be the last issue of that arc, and the five-part arc. But rumor has it, Dan Slott and all of his happy trollness actually is misleading us, and the last issue is going to be issue 30 in a four-part story arc. And yesterday, for many of those, like I said, who don't have time to scour the internet, yesterday there was actually a leak for a Marvel solicitation for April for The Amazing Spider-Man number 1. And on the cover, we have a happy, smiling Peter Parker. So, this year, to coincide with the movie, I think we've all called it already, but I'm calling it now, Peter Parker will be back by April or May of this year. So that's where we're at, Steven.
Do you think that it's going to be the same thing that it was for those of us who hopped onto the end of Amazing to catch the beginning of Superior, that we'll need to get onto the end of Superior to catch the beginning of Amazing, or will it be a completely separate thing?
I think that we're going to be dealing with ramifications of what Dr. Octopus has done to Peter Parker's life. He has made some things better. He's gotten Peter his doctorate. He started Peter's own company. But he's also ruined his reputation as a hero. He's burned bridges with some of the women in his life, the loves of his life, his friends. So I think we're going to be dealing with issues around that. But I don't think you necessarily have to jump into the end of Superior Spider-Man. But I feel like if you want to see this Otto Octavius Superior Spider-Man get his comeuppance, you might want to jump in there and see the end of that book. Because all along, this has been about his downfall. I said that in the beginning. I said that back in our first show. It's about downfall. It's not about him taking over. It's about showing why he's not superior, even though he thinks he is. So it's going to be good because this book has gotten perpetually darker. This is not a book that the kids are going to enjoy reading anymore, I don't believe, because, first of all, the hero is unlikable. He's not the Spider-Man is not likable at all in his own book. He's a snarky, arrogant prick. And I think that's kind of my point about when I say I love to hate Dan Slott is that I hate Superior Spider-Man as a character. He's such an evil monster, and he's burning everything Peter Parker's worked for. But it's a great story. I almost dropped an F-bomb there. It's a great story. It'll be remembered. I think this story will be remembered for some time because it's such a Daredevil. It's not necessarily a new story. The mind swap has been done before, but it's never been done to this extent. And I think you may want to jump in to see the end if you have any kind of love for Peter Parker or hate for Otto Octavius. You might want to see the end. And please don't think that I'm my word is law here when I say that this issue that it's going to end at part four of the Goblin Nation story with issue 30. It could very well go to 31 of part 5. I don't want everybody to just jump to say, well, that's the end of the book, whatever. That's just a rumor that I have looked into. I don't have anything to really compile that yet. But I do firmly believe, based on what I was able to kind of dig up after I read that story, that we are seeing the end of this sooner than we thought. I thought this would go on for another 6-7 months, honestly. And I couldn't be more excited. I think we all now know what we liked about Peter Parker. I think that this has given us a chance to understand who he was as a character and maybe why he believes what he believes. He is the superior Spider-Man, not Otto Octavius. He may be more efficient, but he's not superior because he doesn't have that responsibility behind him. So I think it's going to be a good time, Stephen, and it might be a good idea to jump in and start reading again next month. Just to see how it all ends, if you're intrigued by that notion and seeing where it all begins. I can tell you Green Goblin's going to have a big part to play in this story, and it looks like I may be right. So whether that be that he knows the truth or that Peter Parker maybe is somewhere within that character. So we'll find out, but it's exciting. It's very exciting. This has been a great book all along. But it's been about this downfall, and what a downfall. I mean, it has been brutal. He's turned into a very unlikable character in general, but that's the point. I want everybody to understand it. That's not Dan Slott's writing. Dan Slott did a great job writing this book for 100 issues before this even happened, or more. This is a story arc, and he was meant to be unlikable all along. And now I hope everybody's beginning to understand that now. He's not a hero. He's not a good guy. And how many books can we say the hero is the bad guy? You know, I guess there's more now that we have a more varied comic book world out there, but it's just been fascinating. I think it's really been a fascinating character study in general, and that's what it is. It's a character study. It's about that downfall and showing us why we should love the hero who we had. We should appreciate what we had. It could be worse.
Absolutely. And for those of you who haven't followed Jason's predictions, he's 99.8% correct. The only reason it's 0.8 is because I can't keep track of the 0.2% where he isn't correct. But for those of you just joining us, you are listening to The Culture of Comics, issue number 21. That was Jason Fraser. I'm Stephen Heiner. We've been talking Daredevil, Hawkeye, and just finished catching people up on the non-superior Spider-Man. And the return to Amazing Spider-Man, not coincidentally, not too obviously coincidentally to time with the release of the new movie, Amazing Spider-Man 2.
In April. Woo! Or May, I think. Anyway, coming out very soon. It's going to be a good year for movies, too. I can't wait to talk about that.
Yeah, absolutely. And, Jason, the last thing I want to touch on before taking us to picks of the week and closing out our show today is what you think is going to happen to Otto Octavius. Do is it possible, in the same way we thought, was it possible to kill Peter Parker? Is it possible to kill Otto Octavius? Or do we have to, how can I say this? Do we have to Thanos him and freeze him for another day?
Well, I think, you know, when you think about villains in comic books, there have been a few who have been very successful in their plans, even if it didn't seem like that. Otto Octavius is one of those. Loki is one of those heroes who have actually won, whether they know it or not. Whether the heroes know it or not, the heroes actually beat and won. I think Otto Octavius could go out permanently at the end of this because he accomplished what he needed to. He beat the hero. And why not go out on a high note, right? I mean, why not put a villain out when he's ahead? Now, he will lose this battle. I think there is, from some of the people on the internet, there's kind of the thought that maybe Superior Spider-Man will continue alongside Amazing Spider-Man. But I can tell you if that happens, it'll probably be Spider-Man 2099, the character from the future who is stuck in the present, who will star in Superior Spider-Man. And, of course, Peter Parker in Amazing. I don't think Otto Octavius comes out of this one way or the other. I think if you're smart, I shouldn't say if you're smart, if you plan appropriately, then you take this villain out on a high note. He was already going out anyway. This would be his greatest victory, I would think. And let's take it. Let's remove him from the players' board for... We all know death is a cycle in comic books. He'll be back, but I think you keep him dead for a while. I think people need to not see Otto Octavius for a year or two or more, much like Jean Grey has been gone from comic books for a long time and is now back and is now doing quite well. You let us not have to deal with that. But he did. He survived. He survived his greatest challenge. He has what I would consider a huge, at least moral victory over his enemy. Take him out. I don't know what do you think, Steven? Do you think you keep that villain around, or do you agree we just take him off the board for now because he's accomplished what he needed to?
I like your analogy with Jean Grey. I think that we're going to take him off the board and possibly kill him. Who knew that we were going to get Mar-Vell back before the Cataclysm series, right? So
yeah.
I think he's been so splashy for so long, he's lost his appeal. So if he doesn't die, he's going to be put away in a way where he's not going to be part of the universe for a long time. I don't see any other way.
He doesn't have a place to go. They can't put him back in his body. His body's dead. Now, his grave was robbed in the comic book. I didn't mention that, but his grave has been robbed. But I'm assuming a dead body's a dead body. At least I don't think he's preserved in any way. So he's got nowhere to go when Peter Parker comes back, unless he stays in the back of Peter Parker's mind, which I don't think would work very well.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. We will find
but
out.
We've gotten some good things out of this story arc, and alongside that have been a couple of new series that were actually very cool. You know, we got Superior Foes of Spider-Man and Superior Carnage, which is a limited series, which is actually very cool. But Superior Foes of Spider-Man, Steven, I don't know, we've never got to talk about this, at least not very much. It's actually a pretty good book.
I kind of want that one
to stick around a little bit after Superior Spider-Man ends or changes direction. So
I feel like
there's been good...
There was a Superior split-off book that you said was just absolutely terrible.
There was one that started off slow.
Superior Team-Up, you said that was just terrible.
Well, it started off a little rough, but actually that one's also improved a great deal.
Okay.
So that one's actually a little better too, but no, I think Superior Foes is actually a very good book, and it came off as a result of Superior Spider-Man's actions, and so I want that one to stick around. I want that one to last longer than Otto Octavius does.
All right, so, that takes us into the last part of our show today, Jason, which is... Pick of the week, and I have to confess to our listeners that there have been technical difficulties with my pick of the week. My shipment of comics here in France, not as easy to get a hold of as comics back in America, and I am a little short. I have not gotten my latest shipment, so I don't have a pick of the week that's really current. So this is just going to be Jason's segment today, but everything should be here by next show. So I will be able to contribute to this segment again. But Jason, can you take us through your picks of the week?
I will. And because it's going to be a situation where you don't have any, I'm going to kind of branch out and list probably two or three from each that have been really good, if that's okay.
Yeah.
And that's just because it's been a while since we talked. There's been a lot that's happened. And I want to also give you an idea, Stephen, of the world now, so to speak. You're a month behind, so probably not quite that long. But you know, you've missed a lot of stuff. But I do want to point out that this week really, really kicked off the beginning of the all new Marvel Now, and I want to touch on that for just. We've got some time, so I want to touch on that for just a couple minutes. In what this landscape looks like for this year for Marvel Comics. First of all, there's going to be a lot of books launching this year. A lot, a lot, a lot. And many of them have launched this week. But more and more, all the way through April so far, new Marvel books launching, some ending. I do want to point out for those who are on a price point that there are many new books launching, but many of them are launching at $3.99. And many are double shipping, too. So it's going to be an expensive year to be a Marvel fan. To that point, Stephen, I think we would benefit to have a discussion at some point about why they price some books the way they do, and if that's a viable option based on who the character is. Because when I look at some of these books and the prices that they're at, I'm thinking, why would that be a $4 book? It's never that character's never carried a book for very long before. Why give him a $4 book instead of a $3 book? But anyway, Marvel Now begins this week with, of course, one of my picks of the week for Marvel was the all-new Marvel Now .1. For those who are not in the know already, each year for the last 2 or 3 years, Marvel has put out a .1 book at the beginning of the year that's kind of like a catalog of the year to come. It's a collection of stories about characters who are going to be carrying what they consider some of the important storylines for the year or the important books for the year. This week, the all-new Marvel Now .1, number one, it's such a mouthful, all-new Marvel Now .1, number one, has some very cool stories. It has some stories that lead into the Black Widow book, which is, I'm very intrigued by, Stephen. We actually have a lot of female books for Marvel launching this year, female leads, and Black Widow is going to be among the most exciting of those, I think. I'm excited to read this book. Actually, I should point out, Black Widow number one also came out this week, and that's going to be double shipping, and I believe a $3.99 price point as well. Yeah, it's going to be expensive, but it's so far it's pretty good. So we have Black Widow as one of the storylines in Marvel Now .1. We have Silver Surfer. Now, this one might interest some people because it's written by Dan Slott and also has art by Mike Allred. Very cool little story in there about the Silver Surfer. He's got his own series launching, I believe, next month, or maybe later this month. We have a story from the new Ms. Marvel. Now, this might be a little confusing. I'll explain this in a few minutes. But Ms. Marvel, who is a character named Kamala Khan, and she is obviously of Middle Eastern descent. So Marvel kind of following in the Green Lantern idea here and putting in a character. But what I like about this book is that it seems to be very true to life in terms of how the family life of a Muslim person and how they would deal with dealing with powers and something. I think it's very cool. That's another one of the stories, all in the same issue, by the way. We also have a storyline from The Avengers, which sets up Avengers World, which is a all-new Avengers book. Yes, another one. I don't think any Avengers books are ending, so I'm not sure why they keep adding more, but that story is okay. It's good, but the biggest draw for me, and I know this is like a broken record, but the biggest draw in this book this week for me was Loki. Loki is actually the framing device for this whole series, and Loki's series launches at the end of this month, the beginning of next month. So I really enjoyed every story in this little book here, and it gives us a good view of the landscape of Marvel in the next year. That's one of my Marvel picks of the week. I do want to point out one of my other ones was Black Widow number one. I really, really enjoy it. I think it's, and this is an ongoing series, so I really enjoy the character. This is going to be a book along the lines of Winter Soldier, and that it's going to be a little bit of a spy thriller kind of book. Fantastic art. I think Phil Noto, I believe, is doing the art. I believe that's correct. Fantastic art. A very, very cool start off to the series so far. So far, I'm sticking with the Marvel now. But I do want to point out that another book, my third pick from Marvel this week, actually going to be a non-Marvel Now book, and that's one we discussed today, and that's Daredevil Dark Knight number 8, which was also just a very cool wrap-up of the series. I'm sad to see it go. A very cool series in general. Lots and lots of just different stories, but this is the wrap-up to the Misty Knight Daredevil story dealing with the witness protection. Came out this week as well. So three great Marvel books this week, many more great Marvel books this week, but those are just three that I think I enjoyed, Stephen, and I think that you may want to take a look at. You and our listeners may want to take a look at just to get an idea. Before I move to DC, I'm going to give you guys all, everybody an idea of what we're going to be looking at from Marvel books this year as we launch. As we said, we had several launches this week already. We have the Marvel Now Point One, Avengers World Number One, Black Widow number one, all launching this week. Another great book was the all-new X-Factor number one. For those who are Peter David fans who really enjoyed his X-Factor run all throughout, he's got an all-new X-Factor. Very interesting team. He's got Gambit and Polaris and Quicksilver. And there's going to be a few other characters joining later down the road as well. That launched as well this week. Later on in the year, as I said, we're going to have a Loki Agent of Asgard book, which is going to be very cool. I just know it. Silver Surfer, alongside Ms. Marvel as a comic book, we're going to have Captain Marvel relaunching as well, which is Carol Danvers. Going to have Ghost Rider launching, going to have Punisher launching. We're going to have a book based on the character Dupe from Wolverine and the X-Men as a 5-issue limited series launching this year. We're going to have Wolverine and the X-Men relaunching this year at a number one without Jason Aaron, which I think, and nothing against Jason Aaron, but that's a good thing. I think from an X-Men perspective, he's not been as successful as he is with Thor. And that's just a taste of what we have coming out this year. There's many, many more. And, of course, as I mentioned, Amazing Spider-Man number one in April. So a huge year for Marvel. Secret Avengers launching again. Iron Patriot launching. So many books launching. And I guess before I go into DC and what's been good this week for them, Stephen, I have to ask you, do you think that's too much? I mean, we only have a few books ending.
Hold on. Am I getting the question from the man who pulls 100-something books a month as to whether that's too many books? Because I just want to clarify that before I answer the question.
You know, even I have my limits, and I had reached it where I was at. And I just think with many of these books double shipping and so many launching but so few actually ending, I'm pretty concerned about from a price perspective, but also from trying to keep up with all these books, how that's going to work.
I think this is a point of departure, Jason, and I have my own, as you know, my own self-imposed limit, but I'd like to, if I can, borrow from a conversation on one of my other podcasts as we were talking about soccer. In America, we have our own soccer league, Major League Soccer, and the most popular foreign league in America is the Barclays Premier League, which they play in England. There's been talk, Fox has just recently signed a deal to bring the Bundesliga, which is the German league, onto television here. And we were talking with someone who's a well-known soccer writer, and the question was, how many soccer leagues can you keep up with? And he said, you know, and he's been writing about soccer for like 20 years now. And he said, I really think just two. I think you can focus on your domestic league and on one other. And the rest you can maybe, you know, do a bit of a tasting menu on. And if I look at how we have our show structured and how you and I pull very similar books, that the majority of our energy is spent on DC and Marvel. And then we have some independent books, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's because we're human beings and we don't have an infinite number of hours in the day. So as we are reaching this new age of comics where there are more readers than we've ever, you know, maybe more readers than we've ever had, younger readers, older readers, people accessing it digitally, people accessing it in dead tree format, how you and I prefer. There's lots of things that are changing about the industry, but I think they're creating more bandwidth to meet more demand, which means the traditional fans and readers like yourself and myself are going to have to make choices about what we read, not because there aren't a lot of good books out there, but as we often have to do in life, we have to choose between two goods. I really like this book, and I really like this book. However, I cannot read 87 books per month. Therefore, I'm going to have to get rid of it. And my own, I've always made this case, and I'd be interested to hear what our listeners, how they cope, but I've always had my self-imposed limit of 30. That's one book per day for a regular month, obviously not in February, but you know, if it's a weekend and I, you know, tuck myself into a room, I can read 10 books because I can't really – I found with comics I can't binge read like I would, like, binge watch Game of Thrones or some other show like Boardwalk Empire. There's too much analysis in a comic for me. So mm-hmm. I usually maybe can binge read comics for a couple hours tops. So that would be – a couple hours would maybe get me through 10 issues, maybe 8. Issues. So for me, my self-imposed limit has been 30, which is, I don't know what, one third of your number. So I've always been impressed by how many books you're able to pull, Jason. But I think what will be important for our listeners and for yourself is the process you go through to decide what books you're going to keep. And I was making notes as you were talking, Loki, Agent of Asgard, Ghost Rider, Silver Surfer. I'm not really that interested in Ms. Marvel. I'm much, obviously, more interested in Captain Marvel. But it doesn't mean I won't pick up issue number one of that or issue number one of Black Widow or of Ghost Rider or of Silver Surfer. So part of the new comic, part of renewing, sort of look the same thing as it is in your friendships in life. You have new friends, you have old friends, and you part of making your friendship circle relevant is always incorporating a new person. You don't know how long they'll stick around. Maybe one of those five books I mentioned will be so good that I'll have to dump a book that I committed to. Who knows? But I can tell you I have no intention of subscribing to Ghost Rider, but I'm going to get issue number one. No question. I want to read about it. I want to find out about it. So we'll see what happens. And I think our listeners and myself personally, I'm going to be very interested to see how you make decisions. As they say over here in Europe, how you take decisions on these different characters, because it'll help us learn and also pick new books to follow.
I could easily cut out some DC books, but at the end of the day, I don't want to be that guy who's pigeonholed himself into Marvel all the way. But it comes down to what I really enjoy and what I really, really don't. Am I getting more enjoyment out of one book more than I am the other? So this is going to be the year, finally, of hard decisions, I think, where some books I may have been reading all along out of loyalty may go to the wayside. You're right. It's an exciting time in general. And it is a broader – what I like about what Marvel's doing is it is a much broader market here. With all these new books, they all reach a different audience. And that's fantastic. And kudos for adding so many more, I shouldn't say so many more, but more female leading characters. Very nice. But it's going to be tough. I got to tell you, I probably will get each one of those number ones, and I'll probably do the same process you do. I'll give it some time, see which ones I just absolutely, there might be some that I hate from the beginning and just decide against, but it's going to be tough. I do want to point out one more thing before I move on to the DCs, is that Young Avengers 15 came out this week as well. That was the last issue. You might notice that was not one of my picks of the week. I was touting how amazing this series is, but the last two issues, I did not enjoy as much as the rest of the series. For a few reasons, mostly because these two issues were told from a New Year's Eve perspective, but they were told in kind of vignettes. They were told in short stories from each character. And I don't think that was as effective, and it wasn't really a good amount of closure for the team. But this is, I think, a fairly controversial thing that he did at the end as well, Stephen, and it's put me off. And you know, through my various discussions with you, that I'm a very open-minded individual. I don't hold anything against anybody. But amongst the last pages of this of issue 15, we essentially determined that every character except for Kate Bishop was at least a little gay. So Karen Gillan essentially, I mean, and it's, that's not so bad in the, for a few characters because we knew they were gay from the beginning. But you wait till the last couple pages of a run and then say, oh yeah, I've experimented a little bit. I've done this, I've done that, and then I'm a lesbian. And you look at this and you're like, where did this come from? And why was it necessary at the end? Because I have no problem with people who are gay or vice versa, but I have a problem with it just being put in there without much motivation. I don't know if that makes sense. But
no,
it just...
Because we see it all the time. I think it's an agenda. And again, we talked about this. It's weird because comics reflect so much of what's going on in modern society, but you and I really haven't... ever broach the topic, and you know it's the end of today's show, and I don't really want to broach it right now either. But I do think that your observation is grounded in that a lot of times this stuff is inserted. We watched it awkwardly handled with DC and Batgirl's roommate, the Batwoman issue. That are we allowing stories to demonstrate real life, or do we have agendas that we need to say that this is normal? And so we're going to just insert it into stories, and you're going to have to deal with it. I think it goes back, is it really normal? Or is there an agenda there that's driving something to someone like yourself who professes to be open-minded that you even look at and say, I don't see how that makes any sense whatsoever. I think it's a problem, and I think both companies struggle with it. No one's really done it well, but I think it's because they're missing the point. Is the point about pushing a certain agenda, or is it just telling stories? If you tell stories, things are going to come out. If you feel that your story has to tell a certain story, then sometimes it's going to look awkward. And that's unfortunate, Jason, because I'm thinking about the fact that Young Avengers was your number one pull coming into 2014. Your discussion of it was so... heartfelt that I purchased the trade for issues 1-5 solely on your recommendation. So, to hear that your favorite book ended in a way that was unsatisfactory for you, it bums me out.
Well, I can tell you, as a story, from the beginning, there were two characters who were gay, Hulkling and Wiccan, both gay characters, both, we know that from the beginning. And that story was well done. I really enjoyed all of that. But when you get to the end, like I said, and just the revelations that all of a sudden come out in the space of three pages, it's overkill. And again, it's unnecessary because it didn't need to happen. It could have been spread out further if that was indeed the case. And maybe that would have been more easy for me to swallow. I do want to point out that Young Avengers is a great, great book. All the way up until issue 13, it's a safe bet that you should read it. And really, 13 would be a good point to even an ending to the story. You wouldn't miss any conclusion. 14 and 15 are more of an epilogue. So I still want to encourage everybody to look at this book. And I'm just curious about why these points had to come out so late in the series and so abruptly, and to the point that it was off-putting. And not because I'm bothered by it, but just because, like, why was it necessary to just I'll just turn to everybody that way at the end? I mean, some of those characters, you get the impression they could be that way all along, but some of the characters you had no idea at all. So it's bothersome. And I know I'm coming across as, I know I say I'm open-minded, and I know this is coming across to many probably as, like, yeah, right, it wouldn't bother you if you were. It bothers me because it wasn't done in a good way. It wasn't done in a way that told a story, as you said. It wouldn't bother me otherwise. It just bothered me that it was such an abrupt ending to a book and such a weird story point to end on. With that being said, Young Avengers 1 through 13, good books. Go read them all. Read 14 and 15 if what I talked about interests you, but understand that from my perspective, very, very odd way to end the book because there's no real way to see it coming. And as you can tell by my my predisposition to predicting things. I like to kind of see things coming. I like to know from a story where things are going, bit by bit. Maybe that's just me. But you have not got to read the latest issue of Forever Evil, have you, Stephen, on the DC side?
I have not.
Very cool. Very cool series. That's actually one of my – I know this isn't a pick for this week, but with DC, I wanted to cover a little bit of ground for something that have been happening. And so I really have enjoyed Forever Evil, the latest issue. Continues to progress the story nicely. It's just as I predicted. And, I mean, my predictions are not always – like, they're not the hardest things to come by. You know, it's not like, oh, I can't believe he picked that out. But so far, yes, Lex Luthor is going to be the hero of this story. I can tell you that. He's going to have Bizarro, Black Manta, and Captain Cold, amongst many others, on his side as well, to defeat the crime syndicate. And this, the latest issue pushed that story along a little bit. I'm still intrigued by one major story point that they haven't even really broached yet. They touch on it, and you're really getting – they continue to do so. And that's who is the person under the mask, under the bag they brought with them. The crime syndicate brought somebody in with a bag on their head that they seem to be scared of. They're keeping as a prisoner that we don't know who that is. And so that point still brought further forward, but we still don't have any clue, at least I don't have any clue, who this guy is, but I'm very intrigued. We found out in the Justice League issues, the latest Justice League and Justice League of America, what actually happened to the Justice League. And I've very much enjoyed that. You should take. I know you're going to be getting these issues soon, Stephen, but you're going to really enjoy those. They're obviously not dead. We kind of knew that from the beginning. And, Stephen, I want to point out that actually there's one book that's bringing its way back into my pull list that I was going to drop on DC side that I actually enjoyed this week and last month, and that is Batman Superman. You know, we got that first series, Stephen, that first arc, and it was, I think both of us at that point were like, what the hell's happening here? I don't understand this. I don't think I like it. But the second arc's been pretty cool. It's been a little bit more comic booky. It's Batman and Superman along with Toymaster and Mongol, who are two big villains on the Superman side. Batman and Superman are fighting each other because they're being controlled like a video game. And I think it's a very cool. It's a very cool little story, and so that's one of the pick of the week for this week for DC. But my two other picks.
It's Superman Batman Arena is what you're saying.
Basically, yeah, it's like a fighting game, but it's very cool. It's a very cool little story, and again, this book I think, Stephen, is one that I'm gonna pick up and drop as the storyline interests me. You know, and you've advised to do the same in the past, so this is probably gonna be one that I pick up and drop based on what is coming, what I like as a story. So for me, again, the picks for Marvel were the Marvel Now Point One, Black Widow number one, and Daredevil, Dark Knights. DC, Forever Evil, the latest issue of that, the latest issue of Justice League, and the Batman Superman number seven. I enjoyed those three. On Independence, it's more the same. I wish I had more. I wish I could branch out even more, but I've continued to enjoy Chew Saga. And actually beginning to pick up in my latest, one of my other picks is, Fatal came out this week. So if you want a current pick, Fatal definitely is still rocking it. But I'm beginning to like Walking Dead again a little more. They're actually beginning to get to an interesting storyline as well, in that there's a giant war between survivors, and I think we're going to see some big changes in Walking Dead. So Chew, Fatal, and Walking Dead for me have been pretty good over the last week. /month. Interestingly enough, Stephen, I'm considering picking up Invincible. So there's going to be a jumping on point for that very soon. I might jump onto that so we can have a little viewpoint on some different independent books, since you and I are pretty already set in our independence. I'm going to try to expand our horizons a bit there as well. So it's been a very cool month, though, because, of course, we didn't even get to talk too much about the end of Infinity or anything like that, but it's been good. I mean, there really haven't been too many misfires. It's just sad that the biggest misfire for me was the end of my favorite book.
Well, and I think we'll get to talk. Next month, Jason is producing and hosting all the shows. January, you'll notice that this season that Jason and I, as opposed to alternating every show or every other show, we're just going to alternate months. So I'm producing and hosting all the shows in January, and Jason's going to be producing and hosting in February, and we've got Avengers to lead off February, and we'll definitely get to the conclusion of infinity there, because the ramifications for it are still erupting, and we're even getting a new book, which isn't an Avengers book, but is directly related to the end of Infinity. But we'll talk about that then. Jason, thanks for all the Marvel previews. I'll definitely be looking into that and into my polls. And as I said, I'm anxiously awaiting my shipment. I'll have my own picks of the week here for everybody. But thanks for Jason to kind of step in and basically double up his picks of the week so that we can get some more. Anything else, Jason, before we wrap today's show?
No, it's great to be back. I do hope that when you do get your box, Stephen, that you do enjoy Young Avengers. I know I hope I haven't built it up too much that it just is completely underwhelming to you. But it's good to be back, and I'm excited to be doing these shows again. So thanks for joining me, and thanks all of you for listening. As Stephen mentioned earlier, of course, we still want to try to get some surveys out there, so please help us out and give us some ideas of what books we should be talking about, some ideas on what you like about the show and what you don't. We can take the feedback. It's okay. So please help us out, and thank you for rejoining us.
The shows will now run the first, second, and third Fridays of the month, 8 a.m. Central, 9 a.m. Eastern. For our listeners, so one of the challenges we had last season was mostly not due down to me, not to Jason. Jason has a pretty manageable schedule. I didn't, and this year I've come back to having a manageable schedule. So Jason and I are going to have a consistent time, and at much personal sacrifice of Jason, he's sacrificing some of his sleep to share his. his thoughts and love with you, so make sure you send him some love as well. You can find him at Saint JWF on Twitter. Is that right?
I believe that's correct, sir.
Yeah, you can find him at Saint JWF on Twitter. You can find us at Culture of Comics. That's a pretty easy one. If you're interested in my followings, if you want to see soccer, food, and life in Europe, you can find me at Stephen Heiner, and Stephen with a PH. And until next Friday, we hope that you are enjoying your comics, and we look forward to sharing our thoughts with you next week.
Yours sounds so much more interesting than mine, Stephen. Life in Paris.
Well, we'll talk more about that some other time. All right, Jason, take care, buddy.
Bye-bye.